This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
In studio, State Representative Virgil Osborne this afternoon. I know things seem to be ramping up in Salem.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kyle. It's definitely to that point in session where all the hard stuff is starting to happen. And actually, a lot of hard stuff that is not happening, which is a little bit on the odd side. But I think we're going to start seeing some of the ugly bills coming around pretty soon.
Well, I wanted to start out earlier in the week. The state revenue forecast came out. I knew it was scheduled, and suddenly my email box was getting all kinds of reactions from the governor's office and from both sides of the aisle, and wanted to get your thoughts about what that revenue forecast, that 71-page document, really shows us.
Well, yeah, interesting. Of course, it shows that we're $755 million in the hole. But if you really look at the document and understand how it's made, you would understand that the reason why we're $755 million in the hole is because that's more than that is needed to get them to where they want to be. If we just held our budget where it was in the last biennium, we would be pretty close to on par. But they want to grow government, and that's why they're saying that we're behind, which that basically means they're going to grab every bit of money they can, your kicker tax, everything they can do to continue to grow government. And that is government jobs there and government things that they're wanting to add to the budget, pet projects for the most part. And it's very frustrating. And honestly, they're blaming the Trump administration. If you've watched any of the recent floor sessions, they've been remonstrating on it, you know, pretty much for the last 2 weeks about how the Trump administration has caused Oregon's economy to fail and how bad we're doing. And the reality of it is Trump's been in office a little over 100 days. We've been dealing with bad leadership and one-party governance for the last 38 years. So I just don't really understand why they're trying to deflect the blame. But the reality of it is we need to change some things to make things better.
How real is the potential to try to, I don't even know what the terminology would be, not issue the kicker?
The kicker, they would have to, they would take them, I don't know that they wouldn't issue a kicker at all. It would be they would take most of it away. So there might be a very small kicker. I think last year was $1.8 billion. If they take the money they want to take, and they can do that, and constitutionally they can take the money. They can't, I don't believe they can just take the kicker away, but they can take money and use it in other spots, and there would be just less money to fund the kicker. It's going to happen. They're trying to steal some of it for wildfire protection and resilience. And the reality of it is there's plenty of money in the general fund and also in the emergency management budget to handle that.
Oh, and we'll come back to the fire season issues in a bit here. The transportation package, it seems like that's kind of dogged us all the session. Where's it at now?
It really has, and it's been really an interesting session because that's like the looming cloud that's been over the top of everybody. The Democrats have put together their own package. They pretty much know what they want to do, but they haven't yet given a bill number. I've been told that we're supposed to finally see a bill number next week. Now, they've done this all in secrecy. They have not included the Republican Party in any of the negotiations as of yet, although now we have a couple of our Republican representatives who have defected out of the party to do behind closed door negotiations with the Democrats. We all, for the most part, took an oath at the beginning of session as a Republican caucus saying we would not agree to any tax increases this year. I've been reassured by the two folks that have gone over to work with the Democrats that they are not going to agree to any tax increases, but yet they won't tell us what they're talking about. It's behind closed doors. They won't allow Republican staff in the room. And the Democrats are having the leadership staff in the room, and they're slowly leaking information out to the public. So we're finding out about it at just about at the same rate you are.
Now, do you feel like there's a potential that with the two GOP folks being in there, that they'll have any impact on where things might go?
I really hope so. Those negotiations are typically done through leadership. Either Christine Drazen, our leader of our caucus, Lucetta Elmer, you know, as deputy leader, and myself being the whip. The three of us are generally at the forefront of any negotiations that are happening that are supposed to be bipartisan. None of us were included in this. So there's the reason for that. I don't know. I do know what the reason is, because we're going to be a hard no on taxes. And I guess they've decided to pick two of us off. So hopefully they can get them to come to an agreement with them on taxes. We're going to be a hard no. So the two of our Republican folks that have deflected out, we'll just have to wait and see.
Let's talk about the other tax proposals that are still out there in other places.
Well, interestingly enough, and sadly, I should say, the Democrats are still down one member. Hua Wen is still, she has cancer. She's battling cancer. She's been going through chemotherapy and some other stuff, and we're getting bits and pieces of information on her. Now, she is their 36th vote, and they need 36 votes to get a tax bill. All tax bills start in the House. They don't start in the Senate. They start in the House. They need 36 votes to get a tax bill through. So we really haven't seen them come forward yet with any of their tax bills. Now, we have 44 days left in session. Maximum could be less, but right now on day 45 you can mark yourself safe from taxes.
But now, how does it work if you get to that point, you've got to be adjourned at that point? Is there kind of a methodology there where you do that, but then immediately go into a special session if you're not really done with everything?
Yeah, not likely they would call a special session for tax bills. They would call a special session if we don't do our job, which is to approve the budget. And we're starting to see the budget bills come through, and there will be the budget bills, and we will have to pass those, or they could call a special session. Otherwise, the government shuts down.
And you're dealing with the fact, if I'm correct here, that this new budget would take effect July 1st, so you really don't have a lot of wiggle room.
Right. It would get tight. And I do not want to go back for special session. Not on this. Now, if it was something to do with firefighters or protecting our forest or even helping our, whatever in rural Oregon, I'd be more than happy to go back for a special session.
What about, you mentioned timber. Earlier on, the new administration put out one of the executive orders related to timber. There was kind of an update on that. It seemed like a week or so ago, but we really don't think we really see much movement there.
No, we haven't really seen much movement. Now, there is a lobbyist. He used to be a lobbyist for Val Hoyle. Now he's working. I'm sorry. He used to be one of Val Hoyle's staff. Now he's a lobbyist. He did come by my office last week, and we had a discussion about there is federal funds that are going to come into the state to work on the timber harvest issues that Trump would like us to do. The funding and that work has to go through Oregon Department of Forestry. So ODF is now asking for funding to employ, I believe, 20 more people. Of course, how government works. You have to grow government. They want 20 more folks to handle the environmental impact studies and all of that work because they don't think they can keep up if this thing takes off. I really would be surprised if we saw much movement for the next 2 years.
And what would have to happen before really any movement took place?
Well, I mean, the mills would have to be able to ramp up to do it. We can quadruple our production in the forest. I mean, we got plenty of log trucks and plenty of folks that can fall timber, but that doesn't mean that the mills can handle it all. I do realize some mills are running at half operations right now, and some of them can immediately ramp up. But a lot of the timber that would be taken on the national forest, it's probably going to be bigger than the logs that they're used to taking, which means maybe some adjustments in, chain and feed chains and that type of thing to run through the sawmills. Matt Hill would be much better at that stuff than myself. I mean, those guys, Douglas timber operators, they really have a handle on that more so than me.
Well, and I have heard as well some of the companies, logging companies, etc., as they've ramped back their staff, you don't necessarily have the ability to just grab those people back. A lot of them have gone on to other things.
Well, yeah, when we had the great Spotted Owl shutdown and everybody lost their jobs, thankfully to our thanks to our governor at the time, I should say our president at the time. Everybody retrained. I mean, the timber industry shrunk, and those that were left, they went back to school. They retrained for other positions. They did other things. Their families moved away. Oregon's losing more businesses right now than we are picking them up due to our unfriendly business practices. And so, yeah, it would be a huge turnaround, and it wouldn't come easy. It wouldn't come without expenses either.
And it seems like at the beginning when that order came out, a lot of people were just really gung-ho, like, oh, this is going to be an immediate change and off we go.
Yeah, I agree, and I was hoping, but I'm also pretty realist when it comes to that stuff. And you know, one of my first calls that I made was to Commissioner Freeman. He's part of the ONC, and they really have a handle. You know, when the trigger gets pulled on this, it's going to go through the counties. You know, I mean, this is where the timber is. It's in Douglas County, Coos County, Curry County. You know, the rural counties in Oregon, and the commissioners will have a handle on what's happening. And, you know, optimism-wise, I think we're all guardedly optimistic, I guess would be the right word.
All right, back with more State Representative Virgil Osborne in a moment. The interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com inside Douglas County at 1246 from News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1. State Senator David Brocksmith on Mondays Inside Douglas County, live from Salem. In studio, State Representative Virgil Osborne. So that means because you're here, the House is not in session. You'd wondered a few weeks ago if Friday sessions might be a thing by around now, but not so far.
No, we have slowed things down. We've been reading, and that all falls back on my shoulders. I'm the one that can, because I'm in the minority party, I'm the one that kind of stands up and says we'd like to read this bill or not read this bill. Usually when we're kind of wanting to get through a bunch of bills, we don't make them read any bills. Now we're making them do it on a one case-by-case basis. I pretty much make them read every bill that's, you know, 2 pages and under, 3 pages and under. You know, some of the bills, like yesterday, we had some that were like, you know, half-hour reads to get through. And then there'll be some bills that'll be, and there's one that we had recently that was like a 6-hour read. So, you know, if we really want to put the thing in slow motion, we can do that. But we generally don't do that unless there's something we can get from it. You know, putting it in slow motion, it would not get us Fridays off. So, I mean, if there's a reason, if we want to keep the majority party in line, then we make them start reading. Because they don't like working Fridays either, or Saturdays, or Sundays. But we can make them do that.
Talk about fire season. We're getting very close. We've got Pat Scripp from DFPA coming in next week to talk about it for Oregon Department of Forestry and all these other organizations like DFPA. How do we look set for this year?
I think we're going to be okay. I mean, you know, you never really can predict, although there's a lot of people that think they can predict fire season. I mean, I've seen years where I thought it was going to be no problem, and it was a horrible fire season. We financially, I think we're going to be okay. We still have to pass a bill that is going to fund it, and 3940 is the House bill that is the funding section of the firefighting thing, and we haven't quite figured that one out yet. We're pushing to take the bottle bill. They want to add an extra 5 cents a bottle for, you know, beer and wine, beer, whatever. We're trying to get that taken out as an option. I think we've about got that done. I think that the $150 million was what they need to get started is pretty much a given. They've got that. We need $280 to make the thing happen, and I think we'll find the rest of it in general funds.
And what are you hearing from any of these agencies, or maybe you haven't had those conversations yet about bringing in the seasonal firefighters? Sometimes hiring people is a bit of a struggle too.
Yeah, I don't really think that's going to be an issue. I haven't had a lot of discussion. I do speak with some of our local folks. You know, of course, last year they didn't get paid on time. It took a couple months extra to get their money, so I'm sure they're a little reticent about that. But the fire, let's face it, I mean, firefighting is a profitable business for some of the smaller contractors that get called in. I'm more worried about the federal firefighters coming to these fires. We need to have a very good front line of attack, and I'm sure Pat will talk to you more about that. DFPA does a fantastic job of hitting the fires hard and quick. And really, Douglas County, without DFPA, we would be in a lot worse shape because we just wouldn't have the manpower or the, you know, firefighting today is not just about manpower. It's strategic. It's about where you deploy your assets and how you get them there and what kind of assets get on the fire and how they fight the fires. It's really way more important than manpower in some cases.
Well, and even it seems like it's been a shift in the last few years to having as if, you know, storms are anticipated, having people, you know, kind of staged ready to go, that costs money because they're not doing anything for 48 hours or 72 hours or whatever. But yet when something does happen, they're there versus having to be called in from, you know, across the state or further.
Yeah, it makes a big difference to have those resources already on scene, especially when you know there's a storm coming. The one thing that helps a lot here is the ability to do the first line of attack with the helicopters. I mean, you know, you get a lightning strike fire a lot of times a fire will just literally sit there and burn. It might be an acre, but it may not be growing fast. You get a helicopter on the fire, they can get the fire slowed down enough to where they can get other assets, ground assets on the fire and get it out, especially if we've got rain with the lightning.
Now, for the legislative session, any idea what percentage of legislation still has to be acted upon?
Boy, that's a good question. The last report I had, I believe we still had about, probably somewhere around 1,200 to 1,300 bills active. But that report, you know, we're processing 30 bills a day right now, and have been for the last couple of weeks. So that number is probably down near 1,000 or under 1,000. Some of those will still probably die, which is something we should discuss. I mean, we have met the first chamber deadlines, and we're coming up on the second chamber deadline, which is May 23rd, which is for Senate bills, basically. So anything that, no matter what you've proposed, I know I've had some bills that I proposed and I let them die because I didn't want to get public hearings. But if they haven't had public hearings or work sessions, effectively, that's how you kill the bill. You can't just write on a piece of paper that I killed this bill. If the bill didn't meet the chamber deadline, the bill is dead. And I've had people say, oh, no, you put that bill in, it's still alive. Well, that's frankly a lie. The bill is dead if it did not meet the chamber deadline, and that's how we kill bills.
Now, can they ever be brought back out of death?
The only way a bill can be brought back out is to be bill pulled on the House floor or the Senate floor, and the odds of that happening are somewhere between never happens and almost zero. So, for one thing, it would have to have a majority party. It would be a majority vote, so it would have to have a majority party to do that. And, I mean, there's thousands of bills that just die that same way. It's once it doesn't get past that deadline, it's just a dead bill.
So the deadline for that is a week away. Do we get a better idea on the landscape of things to come once we get past next Friday?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely have that. Really what happens is you get all these bills, you're going through committee, and they'll bunch the bills all together, and they'll give everything a hearing and a work session date. But then as the committees tighten up and time runs out, a lot of those bills just die. They actually don't end up with their work sessions, and they get pushed down the road. Now, I just pushed another SAR bill through, search and rescue bill, that did get a work session. So it's headed to the Senate floor. So, you know, that's awesome for our county, for our sheriff's department, for sure.
And what would that do?
It brings into accountability some of these professional search and rescue teams that they go out and they profit from videoing a rescue or a search, and then they put it up on YouTube, and they're getting paid at a family's peril, potentially, to rescue a body or you know, recover or rescue a person. And we're not saying you can't do it. I mean, that's, you know, it's your right to do whatever you want to do, but we want to make sure that that person is honest up front with the families and with the sheriff's department. If you're going to be working on scene of a search and rescue and you're not part of the sheriff's department, do not identify, or you will be obviously at fault of breaking the law.
You mentioned earlier on a few weeks back about the legislation regarding City of Roseburg and the county and the urban growth boundary. Has that gone any further?
Yeah, I believe it. I'm pretty sure that's cleared the Senate floor. I believe it has. I know it cleared hearing, and I believe it may be on the way to the Senate floor. But yeah, it will. I'm sure it was unanimous out of both houses, so it will. I'm sure the governor will sign that bill.
And what about other legislation you're particularly interested in passing or not passing with what's left of the session?
I've got my bills through. I had a dozen or so that I ran. I think I ended up getting four through. So, I mean, I'm pretty happy with that. But we do have some bills that are coming up. One of the bills that I hopefully will make it through will be the ability to go back and do research for nuclear siting. In the 90s, the '80s, I think it was, the state outlawed nuclear siting, period. And we've never revisited that yet. We're trying to push for renewable energy, and nuclear has to be a piece of that. So we need to unwind that law and basically say we need to be able to study the ability to site nuclear facilities in the state. So I'm hoping that makes it through. At least we can take a second look at it and see if it makes sense.
And do you anticipate any walkout at all?
No, I don't. The gun bills are parked at Ways and Means. 3075 and 3076 are both parked. And I really don't think the Democrats want to bring them out of Ways and Means. Now, I could be completely wrong on this, so we'll see what they say. But whoever votes on those bills is likely going to lose their seat no matter what party they're in. So I think they may stay in Ways and Means through the end of session. Hopefully they do. Senate Bill 243 is working its way through the Senate.
All right, out of time for now. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Kyle, thank you.
State Representative Virgil Osborne on Inside Douglas County, 1257 and News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.